So we're continuing to read about Brahma's prayers from the Bhagavatam. We're hearing Krishna Chakravarti's tika to the first verse, and he was petitioning mercy from his guru to comment, and we left off yesterday. He was discussing the word idya, namidya. Namidyate brahbabushe terinambaraya kanjavatamsha paripicha lasanmukaya vanyesha je kavala vechavishana venu lakshma shriye mridupade pashupangajaya. He's saying idya. Idya means Krishna is the only worshipful Lord. The idya means the worshipful Lord. But then he says, or simply to please you, I glorify you in this verse. Your transcendental body, Sri Krishna, dark blue like a fresh rain cloud, is wrapped in a garment more brilliant than lightning. Krishna says, Brahma's words glorifying Krishna in verse 1 of chapter 14, his words describing Krishna, they suggest two things. One, the earth gets relief from the scorching heat of the summer through the cloud of Krishna's rain. And two, and the Chatika bird-like devotees sustain their lives with the mercy pouring from the rain cloud of Krishna. Because this word is abra, abravapu, that your form is like a cloud. Well, if you're comparing Krishna's form to a cloud, you can compare Krishna's form to a cloud and from different angles. You can say it's like a cloud because it's blue. Krishna's blue, like a monsoon cloud. That's the general comparison. But then there are particular, you can say, there's further attributes of any vapu or any rupam. There's different characteristics, surup lakshana, antitasta lakshana, primary characteristics and secondary. Well, a cloud has a color and it has a form, well, different forms. I keep changing all the time. And it has some characteristics, it's full of water. And then it has effects. That cloud, when it shields the sun, it creates a shading effect like an umbrella. And when it releases its rain, it becomes the cause of an effect known as nourishment and growth and relief from heat and fertilizing the earth. And for different living entities, especially a particular type of bird called a chatiki, they live and thrive on the rainwater falling only from the monsoon clouds. So he says, all right, Krishna, it's a very good analogy that Brahma's used. He's very expertly glorifying Krishna by comparing him to his form to a cloud, because the radiant, lustrous beauty of Krishna's complexion resembles a cloud, a rain cloud, fresh cloud. But moreover, the activities, the lakshana of the cloud to pour forth rain, Krishna also pours forth rain as mercy, Krishna's kripa, a rain of mercy. Like we say, Madhurya Kadambini. Madhurya Kadambini means a cloud burst of sweetness. Kadambini means a roa or a series of clouds releasing sweetness. Madhurya Kadambini. So Vishwanath is saying, yes, he's seeing this meaning. He's seeing the mind. Basically, Vishwanath is understanding the mind of Brahma. It takes one to know one. Brahma, of course, is a pure devotee, the head of the Sampradaya, Vishwanath Chakravarti, Hari Vallabha Das. He's also a pure devotee. He's a pure devotee of the Lord, Krishna. Krishna is his Ishtadeva, his Ijya, his most worshipful personality, and his only worshipful personality, Idya. And in this, in these stutis by Brahma, Brahma is revealing that Krishna, not Vishnu, Krishna, not Purushottam Vishnu, or Purushottam Nrsingha, or Purushottam Ram, Maryada Purushottam, none of those forms of Vishnu, or Vishnu Tattva, or Vishnu Rupam, or Vishnu Vapu, are the worshipful Lord any longer or any more for Brahma. Now Krishna is number one, and the only one, and the first one, and the complete one, and the only one. He says, Nomidya, Nomidya te bra vapushe. So, same with Vishwanath. He has ek ishta. His ishta dev is Sri Krishna Vrindavan, Vrindavan Chandra. And he's understanding, oh, you're saying that Krishna's vapu is like a blue rain cloud, a dark shining blue like a monsoon cloud. And I can understand that you're seeing other attributes of this Krishna cloud. This Krishna cloud relieves the earth when the earth is being scorched and burned from the hot summer rays of jast, and the temperatures rise, especially nowadays. I can't say then, but at least the words are used in the Bhagavatam, the scorching heat of the summer season. And that one would get Krishna and all the residents of Vrindavan would get relief when the full moon would rise over the eastern horizon in the evening. Everyone would get relief from the scorching rays of the sun. And what to speak of when the monsoon rains would come also, then that would provide even greater relief. One thing to get a little cool breeze or a little cool rays, cool soothing moon rays, that will certainly cool down your mind, relieve your mind. But a nice cool rain on an afternoon of the monsoon season is nothing better. Vishnu is comparing Krishna to that rain cloud. He is that rain cloud that he gives relief to the earth when the earth is cracked and dry. You see in the summertime Vrindavan, the earth looks like it's crying. When you walk around at Govardhana or Vrindavan, the trees are so still in May and June. Temperature doesn't go below 115 at night. It goes up to 125 in the day, Fahrenheit, which means like 35 low and 46 high. And the earth is just crying. There's no water. The earth is so tight, it looks like it's going to crack. And the trees are just look like they're so fragile. You can just break them in half. There's no movement, there's no wind, it's very quiet. No one moves from 12 o'clock until 7 o'clock, 12 o'clock noon until 7. Everyone's locked in their houses. Everyone only goes out at night or early morning. It's really austere. And then the earth is crying for rain, water, too much heat. The antidote for heat is, of course, water and coolness. So Krishna, these are some of his attributes of his cloud-like form, that he relieves the earth from the scorching heat of the summer. Well, how does he do that? Well, he walks on the earth. And this sapada ramanam, Vrindavanam sapada ramanam. There's a verse also in the 10th canto in the Rasa Panchadaya section, or maybe Venugit, Chapter 21, where it says, Vrindavanam swaparamanam, swaparamanam, that when Krishna blesses the land of Vrindavan by walking on it with his swapad. Swapad means his own lotus feet, pada. And when, as Krishna places step by step of his beautiful, tender, soft, fragrant lotus feet upon the breast of Mother Earth, or upon the surface of Mother Earth, then she feels ecstatic, erotic bliss, ramanam. Ramanam means erotic conjugal love, intimacy, ramaniya. And that's the word that Sukadeva Goswami says, that the earth, not only the earth, but the birds, the trees, the gopis, everyone, especially the female personalities, the earth is female, the water is female, the creepers are female, the gopis are female. That's their gender. And she's Dharani. Dharani is Mother Earth. Dharani are Bhumi and Yamuna and Vishaka and Kalindi and the Latas and the Madhavis. Madhavis and Latas and Jui. These are all feminine names and feminine personalities. They feel this Ramanam. They feel erotic bliss. Vrindavanam Soparam Ramanam. It's a very significant verse that shows that Krishna is having conjugal love just through his feet. He's emanating this Madhurya Prem. This is the Prema Madhurya of Krishna. There's four Madhuryas that Rupa Goswami analyzes in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Rupa Madhurya, his form is full of Madhurya, Sringar Madhurya, the sweetness of conjugal erotic love, its form is emanating and full of that. And its flute is emanating and full of this madhurya, veno madhurya, the sweet Sringara Ras, veno madhurya, rupa madhurya. Then his leelas, whereas he has leelas in Vatsali Ras and Sakhi Ras, but the sweetest leelas are his Sringara Ras with the gopis, and erotic love, and the kunjas of Vrindavan, Jayarara Madhava Kunja Vihari, Gopi Janavallavala Giri Varadari. This is his Leela Madhurya. And then finally there's Prema Madhurya, his sweetness of Prema. So he's distributing Prema through his feet, his Ramanam through his feet. It's very significant and deep verse. There's very long tikas that show how Krishna is having such intimacy in Vrindavan, that he has such intimate confidential connection even with the earth and the birds and the animals and the trees, the deer, the female deer are following him when he walks, and they're feeling ecstatic bliss and crying, and their husbands are following behind them, and the gopis are glorifying, saying, "Oh dear, you're much more fortunate than us. Your husbands go along with you when you go to meet Krishna, and they don't stop you, they join you." All these beautiful statements. So Krishna is really in a very intimate and confidential and sweet, charming mood in this Vrindavan Dham. And even Vrindavan itself, the land of Vrindavan, Brajabhumi Vrindavan Dham Ki. Even the land of Vrindavan is having conjugal love with Krishna. Vrindavanam doesn't say Gopinam, Radhikam, Lalitam. It says Vrindavanam Sopada Ramanam. Extraordinary. So therefore, when Krishna walks in the summertime with his cloud-like body, Abhravapushe, his feet are also cloud-like. So as a cloud, from every part of the cloud's body, nourishing, soothing, calming, sweet, satisfying rain falls. It's not that rain only falls from the tip of the cloud and not the tail of the cloud. So therefore, Krishna's body is a cloud. His hands are a cloud. His face, his smile, his feet are also a cloud. So Padaramanam, Vishnath is seeing that, yes, Brahma, you very aptly describe Krishna, that his Abhravapushe, his cloud, beautiful, glimmering, lustrous, electric, sham blue colored body like a beautiful monsoon cloud. It has the attributes of a cloud. It's raining mercy. And the earth gets relief from the scorching heat of the summer through the cloud of Krishna's rain. The rain is coming through his feet as he walks on the earth. And then the chatika birds, are flying. So this is from below, even Krishna's a cloud walking on the earth, which is a very unusual cloud. Clouds don't usually walk on the earth. Their place of leela, their place of drama is flying in the sky, floating in the sky, moving here and there, over the ocean, seas, mountains, valleys, everywhere. But Krishna is walking on the land. A cloud, imagine a cloud, and the gopis say that, these verses, that you appear to be a cloud that has descended to the earth and you're walking amongst us. So the Vishnu is saying, here he is, the cloud, this cloud, this Krishna Ambara, this Krishna Abra, Abhravapushe, this form of Krishna is a walking cloud. Usually clouds are flying. They don't walk, they fly, they float. They float in the sky, they fly, they're propelled and tossed and carried by the winds, going here and there, dropping their nourishing, life-giving, satisfying and soothing rain upon one and all. So Krishna is walking in the land of Vrindavan, satisfying the very earth of Vrindavan by the touch of his feet, which are distributing the rain of mercy, the rain of prema. This is a beautiful point that has been indicated, hidden within the words, the profound and deep words of Adi Guru Brahmaji, and Vishwanath is understanding that. And as the cloud, the Krishna is a special cloud, because clouds only operate in the sky and drop the rain to the earth, and nourish the earth. Krishna is directly nourishing the earth with the touch of his cloud-like feet. And the chatiki birds fly in the sky to catch the water. Usually the clouds in the sky dropping its water in the earth. As the water falls from the sky to the earth, the chatikis catch it and live and nourish themselves and sustain their existence by that rainwater falling at monsoon time. Now the Krishna clouds on the earth, from the earth distributing, and he's distributing water from the earth up. So the the chatiki birds don't have to fly in the sky, they can come on the earth and drink from Krishna cloud. So the comparison here is not birds, but the chatiki bird-like devotees who are suffering intense trishna from Krishna. Trishna means thirst, and viraha bhav, the viraha agni, the scorching heat of the summer season is a summer season of separation for the devotees. When they can't see the Lord, they're separated. The gopis are separated in the day, the coward boys are separated at night, Mother Yashoda is separated in the day, the forest is separated at night when Krishna leaves in the afternoon. So this is viraha agni, the fire, the scorching fire of separation, and they say that that's more burning than thousands and thousands of Kalakuta oceans. When Radharani is feeling separation from Krishna, when he went to Mathura and Dwarka, said she was burning alive, roasting. She was being cooked like a clay pot in a kiln. Slow fire. Inside a pottery kiln or an oven for cooking clay, you fashion a bowl or a cup or a plate out of clay, then you put it in an oven, a brick kiln, and the temperature goes to 1,000, 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit, very high, 300 degrees centigrade or something, 500, and it stays there for 12 hours to bake the clay like a cake. Then it becomes fried, or what do you call it? fired clay. Then it holds water and doesn't leak, and you can put designs on it and whatnot. So it's explained that Radharani was burning inside this brick kiln of separation from Krishna. Much more unbelievably intense than the scorching heat of the summer season that's being described here. That the cloud gives relief from that. And Radharani had no relief, only the hope that Krishna would return after 2 days, which he said, Parso Bhavaswayenge. So there's Parsoli Gram, which means, Parso means, I'll be back. That's, he left the coward boy, said, when you come here, I'll be back the day after tomorrow. 2 days from now. Day after tomorrow means Parso. There's Parsoli Gram right there at the end of Govardhan. And there's Lotek Ivava. It means, Lota means waiting for you to come back. The coward boys are waiting, looking towards Mathura. That's why he's looking west, northwest there. They couldn't look any other way. Their lover went that way. There's nothing. He went that way. My heart went to the north, east. Well, they're in the west, so we went to the east, I guess southeast to Mathura. So they're standing there looking that direction. And there's no other place to look. Because he went that way, so he has to come back. If you leave me, I'm looking at you, then if you come back, you won't come back from behind my head, you'll come back from the same way you left. So the coward boys are still waiting there for him to come back the day after tomorrow. Lauta ki bhava. And she was burning alive, so the earth is feeling this scorching. So the earth, the devotees, then in this viraha agni, they're being scorched in this fire of separation from Krishna. And then when they see him, the chatika bird-like devotees sustain their lives with the mercy pouring from the rain of cloud of Krishna. So Krishna fries each of us. He puts us, he fires us in the kiln of separation. Each chatiki-like devotee can only live if he gets some mercy from Krishna. Kripa karo, kripa karo, hey Bhagavan. Govinda damo dharamadaveti, Govinda damo dharamadaveti. Draupadi and so many devotees have prayed for mercy. Krishna, please give me mercy. One gopi was feeling great separation from Krishna. She was locked in her house and she was not able to go to meet Krishna in the Sanket Kunj, because her mean, nasty mother-in-law forbid her from going out. So she didn't know how to pass her time. She was burning in separation. And she was so thirsty and yearning and anxious to meet her beloved Krishna and offer herself for his pleasure and services. So she didn't know what to do. She was exasperated and beside herself. So one parrot, somehow Vrindadevi understood the situation. So this one parrot landed on the windowsill of her palace apartment in Barsana, or in Yavat. She said, hey, Shuk, Actually, it was a shari, a female parrot. Hey, Tota, or Toti, or whatever. Hey, female parrot. Hey, shari, come here. Sit on my hand. So then, to relieve her scorching fire of separation, that viraha agni, that burning fire, she said, listen, please listen and repeat after me. Govinda Damo Dara Madhaveti, Govinda Damo Dara Madhaveti, Govinda Damo Dara Madhaveti, Govinda Damo Dara Madhaveti. And the parrot was gradually picking it up. It wasn't a very difficult song. And the parrot started singing, Govinda Damodar Madhaveti. And in this way, that beautiful rain of mercy emanating from Krishna's name entered the ears of that gopi and sprinkled her heart with some life-giving and sustaining drops, Namamrit, Hari Namamrit. And this way she revived herself and kept from leaving her body. And the fire of separation, Viraha Agni, was somewhat suppressed and subdued. So this pastime is there in Govinda Damodar Stotram by Vilva Mangala Thakur. So that we are that way. Krishna puts us in the brick kiln. You see, they fire these bricks in these kilns, a big smokestack around Hodal, and here they're all black smoke going into the air, and they're making bricks, local-made bricks. So Krishna has each devotee in a brick kiln. And when you get very hot, and when you're really scorching heat on your head, and you're sweating a lot, then what happens? You become extremely thirsty. Extremely thirsty. Water, water, water. So this is called Trishna. Trishna means thirst for Krishna. When one begins to feel separation from Krishna and Radharani, then he starts getting thirsty. If you're not getting thirsty, that means you're not burning. If you're burning, one of the symptoms of burning up or having an intense fever is thirst. So if you ask somebody, are you thirsty? No. Are you thirsty for Krishna's name? Nam Trishna? Are you thirsty? No. Are you thirsty for Krishna's Leela? Leela Trishna? Nam Trishna? No. Are you thirsty for Krishna's beautiful transcendental form? No. This is working, okay? Are you thirsty? That's Rupam, Rup Trishna. And then you say to the person, oh, what are you thirsty for? And he said, for Limpka. Limpka is another way of spelling Maya. Or I'm thirsty for cola or Tropicana juice. I'm thirsty for juice, Maya Ras, the juice of Maya, the taste of illusion, the taste of perversion. So in the jaundiced state, then the tongue has no power to taste the reality. Because the bile disease in the liver, one cannot taste the sweetness of Krishna Nam. Through the disease of the jaundice of ignorance. But this, when we advance in Krishna consciousness, we start to feel feverish. Krishna says, oh, you're advancing. I have one oven for you. One pottery kiln, K-I-L-N, K-I-L-N, kiln, or brick oven. I'm going to put you in there. Now you're soft clay. Your heart is very soft, and you're not very staunch. You're not very serious. You're a little mushy in the middle. Mushy in the middle, not very fixed up, not very nishta. Nishta means solid. Nishta means condensed. Nishta means concentrated. Nishtita bhakti, not like splayed out, flayed out, here or there, sometimes concentrated, sometimes diluted, sometimes washed up, sometimes washed out. So he said, all right, now you're making a bounce in the, okay, lock you in this oven. Oh, Krishna, it's getting very hot in here. Wow, I'm really sweating. My clothes are soaking. I feel like I'm burning up. I'm feeling thirsty, very thirsty. Krishna, 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 so much thirst. Help, how can I find soulless relief? Oh, I need, where is that rain cloud? Where is that abravapushe? Oh, Krishna, oh, Damodara Madhava. Where is the relief? Where is the solace? Oh, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Then the rain comes, Namamrit. And we feel some cool vibration sweep over our mind and trickle down into our heart. We feel, yes, this cloud of Krishna's mercy has satisfied my chatuki bird-like heart that is so eagerly yearning for a drop of mercy from my beautiful Lord. Finally, after so many lifetimes, he sprinkled a few drops of mercy my way. Sri Krishna Bhagavan Ki. The and Vishnu says that chatuka bird-like devotees sustain their lives with the mercy pouring from the rain cloud of Krishna. No mercy, no sustenance. If you're not eating and drinking, will you sustain your life for very long? No. You will die. So, mercy, mercy, mercy. Kripa, kripa, kripa. Prasad, Krishna prasad. We need the mercy. Now Brahma continues in his prayer, which Vishnath is repeating, and he will analyze. Vishnath, quoting the verse, says, Lord Brahma continues, Gunjaberry earrings accent the beauty of your face. Flowers adorn your hair, and a peacock feather rests atop your head. Now Vishnath comments on this particular translation of a section of the verse about Krishna's ornaments. Vishnath says, Chakravartipat says, Brahma's description reveals the superiority of lowly, poisonous gunja berries of Braj to the precious jewels of Vaikuntha. Some people talk about things, and they say, yes, this and that, this and that. Then sometimes a friend will challenge them, because people want to sound very much like the authorities. I said, have you ever actually done that? I said, well, no. Many times. So now Brahma, Vishnu is appreciating that Brahma has seen Vishnu. He's seen the Aishwarya Mahi Vishnu. He's seen Aishwarya Purushottam Vishnu. He's been to Vaikuntha. He's met him personally. They've attended yajnas together, and he knows what he looks like. And he knows he wears these diamond-studded crowns and necklaces and gold and all these exotic gems and jewels. And he remembers it, he's seen it. Now he's seen Krishna, this Purushottam Krishna. And he says, this guy is the real Purushottam. May the real Purushottam Bhagavan please stand up. So he's the Madhurya Purushottam. He's the Purnatara Bhagavan, or Purnatam rather, the Purnatam Bhagavan, the complete topmost form of Bhagavan. And he's saying, this is why, because he wears poison berries. Krishna is the Supreme Lord because he wears poison berries and not diamond necklaces. Oh yeah, he must be the Supreme. That means he's really rich. He wears berries that grow on the creepers of Vrindavan, and anyone can pick them up for free. Maybe if I grab a few red and black berries and put them around my neck, then somebody will consider me to be God. But I don't think Brahma will give you the certification. He might say, okay, you have the gunja berries. Yes, yes. Now you have a peacock feather on your head. Yes, yes. And you have some wild forest flowers around your neck. Yes. So the person says, so Brahma, you'll give me the certification on Bhagavan? Yes, yes, I will. You look like the Purushottam. One last thing. Can you show your unlimited Vishnu forms coming out of your body, every pore of your body, along with cowherd boys? Give me a few days to work on that. So then you may be like Madhu Mangal, who dressed up as Krishna one day and got kicked up the side of the head by Keshi, went tumbling back 200 meters. He said, Krishna, what is this? When you simply wear a peacock feather on your top knot, and you tuck a flute in your belt, and then you wear some gunja mala, and then you go into someone's house and steal, and instead of punishing you, when I go to steal some laddus, they give me a slap. The gopis slap me, and they pull my sika, and they give me a hard time, and they start jeering me and mocking me for my big belly and funny way, crooked way of walking and bending my neck. But you do the same thing, And you get caught, and they said, you this, and then they see your sweet face and your peacock feather and your gunjamala and Vaijayanti garland. And they say, oh, Krishna, why did you come to steal my yogurt? You should take some sandesh. Why don't you take... I also have sandesh in my butter storage, and I have some ladders and sandesh and some burfi. Why you just want yogurt and butter? And they start... I've seen with my own eyes, they're feeding you directly, and you're just giggling and laughing, they're giggling and laughing. And they totally forget that you broke 3 yogurt pots right on the floor, smashed them up, ran all over their house and left butter-stained footprints everywhere. And they forgot all about that and treat you like a king. So please, I want to get all these benefits. So let me dress up as you for one day. Give me your peacock feather. Okay, I stick on my top knot. Give me your flute and I'll tuck it in my belt and your yellow dhoti. All right. Yes, Madhu Mangal, do you take it? Now, and let me have that gunjaberry necklace, red and black gunjaberry necklace. Yes, you take it. For my neck, I'll personally put it on your neck. You won't even have to get your own necklace. And give me, how about a Vaijayanti? Take this. And now go and see what happens. So he's walking along and he's, wow, now Krishna for the day. And he came by Keshi God and he went in someone's house and he was just about to steal some butter and someone said, hey, Madhu Mangal, you thief, what are you doing? Disguising yourself as a Christian, get out of here. And they picked up his, beat him. He's not only stealing, he's impersonating. He's an imposter. Thief, chore, imposter. Catch him! And they're chasing Madhu Mangal, and he's running away. And then he thought, wow, this is not working like I thought it would. Krishna did the same thing. He does the same thing. He goes into the house, he goes into the butter store, and he gets in somehow. He gets his hands on the yogurt and butter, and then they catch him. Instead of, they drop their stick, they don't beat him, they simply embrace him and smother him with kisses and stuff his face with burfi. And I can't even get my foot inside the house before they're chasing him down the street throwing rocks at me. Wow, it's not as easy as I thought it would be, dressing up as Krishna. Let's see. Oh, there's another. Hey, what's that? My God, it's this huge, wild horse. It's like some kind of monster. Maybe it's sent by Kamsa or something. It's like, his tail is like 8,000 feet high. It's like 4,000 meters high. His tail is... The clouds are getting knocked out of the sky when he swishes and moves his tail back and forth. The clouds are getting scattered hither and thither. And hot breath is coming out of his nostrils with so much force that the trees are uprooting and flying away. What kind of monster is this? It looks like a horse, but it's... Hey! Then Keshi... gets the Keshi God, and all he knows is a description of Krishna given to him by Kamsa. Kamsa said, when you get to Vrindavan, you'll see a little boy, and you can easily just tell who's Krishna because he has a peacock feather on his head, and red and black gunjaberry necklace around his neck, and he has a flute tucked in his belt, and his yellow dhoti, and he has a wildflower garland. So then Keshi, he looked and he only has a little horse brain, so he can't figure out too much. His little horse brain. He said, hey, look at that little rascal. That must be that Krishna. Oh, how'd you kill him? Oh. And he said, oh, George! And he's running and then he runs right up to Madhu Mangal. Madhu Mangal got so scared, he stood there, ah, mommy, mommy, mommy. And then Keshi turned around and went, boing! Kicked him with his hind legs. And Madhu Mangal went, boom! And he flew back about 200 meters and they fell on his backside, and good thing he's fat, so it didn't hurt too much, but he got a little tumbled up and bruised. Mostly his ego got shaken up and he got really frightened. So he said, well, let me get out of here. I gotta run for my life. Krishna! And he ran back to Krishna. He threw the peacock feather on the ground. He said, take your flute here and here's your Vaijayanti mala. Forget it. And he's all scruffed up and mud and dirt everywhere on his nose and face. And Krishna said, what happened to you? You look all messed up. Did you get any burfi and did you get any burfi and sandesh and yogurt and butter? He said, no, I almost got killed. There's a monster at Keshi God. Down at the Yamuna. I don't know what it is. I think some demon henchman sent by Kamsa. He kicked me right in the head. I think he thought I was you or something. What? He harassed my devotee? Kontiya pratijanihi name bhakti pranashyati. Declared boldly, Madhumangal, my devotee never perishes. Let's go. Come on, boys. So then they run down to Keshika and say, who do you think you are, Buster? Kicking a Brahmin like this is aparad, Brahmin aparad. Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha Jagatitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Nama. So then, needless to say, Krishna vanquished that demon Keshi. Now this same attire is being glorified by Brahma. So Vishnu is saying, Brahma's description reveals, because he's appreciating, Brahma has already seen the topmost, what he thought beforehand was the topmost form of God at Aishwarya Mai Purushottam Vishnu. Now he's understood that this Purushottam, he doesn't have gold and diamonds and jewels and gems, studded crowns. He has simply gunja and lowly contaminated peacock feathers. Vishnu says, Brahma's description reveals the superiority of the lowly, insignificant, worthless, valueless gunja berries of Braj to the precious jewels of Vaikuntha. So the Chintamani gems of Vaikuntha are like a fig compared to poisoned gunja berries of Vrindavan. Sri Vrindavan Dhamma Ki. So this is the Aishwarya Vrindavan, the worthless, insignificant berry that grows everywhere wild in the forest, and any Pulinda woman can pick up and make a free necklace or some earrings, or no, doesn't cost a penny, they're free for the taking, is more glorious, more opulent, more grand and majestic than the greatest costly Chintamani gems of Vaikuntha. Chintamani prakara sadma shukalpa vriksha laksha vritesha surabhir avipali antam lakshmi sahasra satasambrama sevyamanam. The same Brahma who uttered Brahma Samhita, glorifying Vaikuntha. Lakshmi sahasra satasambrama sevyamanam. The thousands and millions of Lakshmi devis are there serving the Lord, and the ground is paved with Chintamani. Now he's seeing the origin of that Vaikuntha Nath, the supreme Vaikuntha Nath, the Purushottam Sri Krishna, and what he wears and where he lives. Oh, his Brajadam is so much opulent, so grand. Here instead of Chintamani, we have Brajaraj. Here instead of Chintamani, we have Goduli, the dust kicked up by the hoofs of the cows, which sprinkles on Krishna's hair when he returns in the afternoon in the Sapuran Leela, and adorns his face with such beautiful shades of grey and smoke color and beautiful brown tinges. He looks so beautiful in the setting sun, and the gopis, they sigh and their hearts skip a beat to see that beautiful form of Krishna sprinkled with the goduli from the sacred feet of the Braj's cows. There's no Chintamani there. It's all simple and beautiful and natural and human-like. And furthermore, the forest garland of wild flowers and leaves around Krishna's neck is superior to those made of parijat flowers from Swargaloka. At the time of her wedding in Dwarka, there's a gala wedding, Rukmini's wedding, Rukmini Vivaha. Of course, she was kidnapped, Gandharva style, but then she refused to live with Krishna until a proper wedding was performed. So he kidnapped her from Kundina, from the Chandrabhaga temple, when she came out after doing puja to Durga to create auspiciousness on her marriage, her Swayamvara day. But per the plan arranged or designed by herself, carried by a Brahmin to Dwarka, Krishna came and swooped her away and kidnapped her. And they rode on a chariot together to Dwarka, and then when they got there, she said, I will stay with your mother, Devaki and Vasudeva, separately, in their separate quarters. And after a proper marriage and an auspicious Mangala Tithi has been arranged, then we can live together as husband and wife, the first queen of Krishna, Rukmini, that Mukya queen. So in Vrindavan, Rukmini is Chandravali, and she's number two, but she wanted to be number one. So Krishna fulfilled her desire in Dwarka Leela. She can never be number one in Vrindavan. In Vrindavan there's only one, and there's one only one, and that's Radha. Radha Rani Ki Jai. So Chandravali, she fulfilled her desire, she became the chief, the Mukya Mahishi it's called. Mukya Mahishi, which means the chief or primary queen, also the first one and also the chief one. Sometimes it's described that Krishna was henpecked. He was controlled by Rukmini. He tried to make her angry sometimes, and she would just drop her chamara and faint on the ground. And Radharani appeared in Dwarka Lila Satyabhama, a little fiery, but number two queen. And that described in Lalita Madhav by Rupa Goswami, how she appeared in the Lila, and very interesting arrangement for that. When Rukmini was the official vivaha, was there, Narada Muni came. He wanted to bring a nice gift. But what does a vairagi give? Vairagi has nothing. He's just traveling around, playing his veena, playing his folk guitar, or his harmonica. And he's like a hippie. And all you have is your musical instrument, your harmonica, or your bongos, or your guitar, and your flute in your pocket. And just wandering around, hitchhiking, getting whatever you get here and there. Handouts, it's called. So he goes to Vaikuntha, he eats pretty good, and he stopped off in Indraloka and preached to Indra to get, you know, follow the four regular principles. Because Indra has a little tough time with that, like some devotees also. Indra's a great devotee. He's a sura. He's not an asura. He's a deva. He's a Vaishnava, devotee of Vishnu and Krishna. Sometimes he has a hard time following the four regs, gets a little too intoxicated and chases the wives of different rishis and gets in trouble. Narada Muni goes there as a guru of the demigods and preaches to him to come follow the temple program and get up early and chant 16 rounds. He should be an exemplary grihastha for the rest of the demigods, since he is the emperor, the chief of them all. So during one of those visits, it just happened to coincide. He got an invitation on the courier mail up there, inviting him to Dwarka to the royal marriage of Rukmini and Bhagavan Sri Krishna at Dwarkadish. In Dwarka, so he thought, well, I should bring a gift, I should bring something they don't have over there in the Earth planet. Well, they don't have these celestial Parijat flowers, which are so fragrant. The flower never fades. It never gets wilted. And it's always fragrant and always attractive and beautiful. It emits a celestial heavenly fragrance which is not available on the Earth planet. There's nothing like it. It smells like this. It smells like a lotus. No, a rose. It smells like jui. No, bela. No, mogra. No, it smells like Parijat. That's it. And although there's some trees they call Parijat here on Earth, they're not the real Parijat. It's not an earthly flower. So he thought, well, I'm a rishi sage. I can just put this inside my veena here and carry it down. So he offered Rukmini a Parijat flower, and she was so happy. Oh, she was the envy of all the other queens. She got, wow, you got this, on your marriage, you got a Parijat flower. You're so lucky, you know. Krishna was already married. And the other queens were already there, and Krishna and Narada Muni came to Dwarka, so all the queens gathered to receive him and get his blessings. So he said, Krishna, I brought a nice gift for Rukmini, because she's a chief. And all the other queens said, why didn't he give it to me? Why did Krishna give that flower to Rukmini? He could have given it to me, said Mitravinda. He could have given it to me, said Satya. He could have given it to me, said Kalindi and Jamavati. And then, that's what they thought, oh, why didn't he give it to me? But he gave it to Rukmini. Oh, anyway, she's a chief. But then when Satyabhama saw Narada Muni give that flower to Dwarkadish, and then Dwarkadish immediately, without hesitation, gave it to Rukmini, she started to burn. She didn't think, well, why didn't he give it to me? She said, what is this? Just see. I thought, what is this? I thought I was the... Okay, she's a Mukya Mahishi, but I'm his favorite. All right, I'll make sure that he gives me a whole tree of Parijat flowers. Just see my powers. And the pastime is there, as everyone knows. Krishna was invited by Indra to attend a big dance party in Indraloka. Some party, birthday party with his son or something. And Krishna went there, and he was going there with Satyabhama on the celestial chariot, or Garuda, or whatever, Garuda, I suppose. It seems like it was a chariot because he was fighting, or maybe he was fighting on Garuda, but he went there at any rate by Garuda or something. And when he got there, because what happened was that precluding this going to Indraloka, Satyabhama was pouting. She was in Mon. She was angry in Dwarka. And Krishna said, why won't you talk to me? She was in the Kop Bhavan. K-O-P-A, Kop Bhavan is the angry room. The queens would always have one room where they would go and lie on the floor and throw their crowns off and just wear real like night clothes, or real like simple clothes and no jewelry, and let their hair loose and just would talk, read for days, because they were, it's like kind of like a children's tempered tantrum. But it's a way of letting off heat and letting off anger and steam. So they had a special room adjoining their bedroom. There'd be the bedroom, there's a dressing room, and the bedroom, and all these, you know, snangar and all these different rooms in the palace where the queen and her quarters, the royal quarters for the queen. There's also Kop Bhavan. Even 500 years ago, you see in these palaces in Jaipur and other places, the angry room. But they don't have one for the king. There's no Kop Bhavan for the king, but I guess he takes his anger out on neighboring kings. When the king gets angry with his wife, he goes attacks some kingdom and beats the guy up and brings back a bunch of diamonds to give his wife or something. So the wife doesn't have any recourse to her. She doesn't have any vent for anger, any outlet, so she locks herself up, and the servants can't go in, the maid servants can't go in. Please, Satyabhama, open up. No! Go! Please, open up. I'll give you whatever you want. Please! So she thought, yes. So then she opened the door. Yes, yes, come in. What is it? Why don't you speak? No, I'm very angry with you. You gave Rukmini that flower. Why didn't you give it to me? Oh, that was nothing. It's only a flower. What's the big deal? It's not one flower. He said, no, it's not one flower. It means that she's your favorite. Okay, she's a Mukhya Mahishi, but I thought I was your favorite. I thought she's captured the post. She's captured the post, and she sits you beside you on the asan and Sudharma Assembly House at all the royal functions. We are attending queens. We are second stringers, so to speak. And all the public functions, she's presiding there. And all the yagas, she sits next to you, and all the fire yagas. She's a primary queen. But I thought I was your favorite. She's the official queen, but I'm your heart queen, a heartly queen. I thought I was your favorite. Why didn't you give it to me? Come on, Satyabhama. Cool down. It's nothing to get so hyped up about. No, it is. It means you don't love me. You don't really care for me. It's all words. What are you talking about? I'll give my very life for you. Yes? All right then. You will? Yes, I'll do anything for you. I'll give you anything in this universe, whatever you want, I'll give you. Yes, you will? All right. I want not a parijat flower. I want a whole tree of parijat flowers planted in my courtyard of my palace near the front gate. So whenever Rukmini walks by my palace and looks in the front gate, she's going to see this beautiful parijat tree and she's going to burn with envy. That's what I want. Oh my God. Satyabhama, you're really fired up. All right, yes. Krishna did a typical Indian move. You say yes, yes, yes to whatever. Anyone asks you anything in India, you say yes, yes, yes. Boss asks the servant, the master asks the servant, do this and do that, and the servant says, yes, boss, yes, yes, yes. Then the servant does whatever he wants. So Krishna said, yes, surely, Satyabhama, I will do that. And then many months went by and there was no parijat flower because they didn't go on any vacations. There was no way. So somehow or other they were invited, as I mentioned, to Indraloka. And Krishna forgot all about it. And Satyabhama never forgot about it. She was counting the days and waiting for the invitation, eagerly looking every day in the mail when she would get an invitation from Indra to come on down for the hoedown or whatever, some party over there. So finally that auspicious day came, and they went and they were there. Krishna was a guest of honor in Indraloka, and they toured the Nandakanan gardens together, and Indra showed all the beautiful ambiance of Swarga and entertained them as honored guests, and they stayed a while. And then when they walked through the Nandakanan gardens, King Indra is quite a horticulturist, so he has a lot of beautiful trees and plants that other demigods don't have, because he's the king of the demigods. So everybody's always giving him special gifts, special trees and hybrid plants and creepers, because he likes gardens. Any rich man usually does. So he has all kinds of special flowers and creepers from different planets, margin roses from Mars and lotus flowers from Jupiter and all kinds of amazing celestial things in his garden of delights, and fruits that no one's ever seen it before. And they're not on the earth. I mean, even though Krishna's God in Dwarka, it's Naralila. Dwarka's fantastic. You can read the opulence of Dwarka in the 10th canto, how opulent the streets are paved with gold and all these things. But it's not as opulent as Indraloka. It's more and it isn't. On one level it is, if you can read descriptions like that, but then you'll see that, well, but it doesn't have Parijat trees, so that means it's less. Indra has and Krishna doesn't. Well, this is for Leela, because Krishna's having Naralila. So when they went through that tour of Nandakanan Gardens, then Satyabhama spied that Parijat. That's that flower. It came from that tree. Oh, that's a few of these trees. Oh, that's the best one right there. Ah, that's the biggest one. That has the most flowers. So Satyabhama silently marked that in her mind. That's the one I want. Now the party was over. Everyone's saying goodbye. And Krishna got on his chariot or Garuda or whatever his Viman was. And they're leaving, because the gardens are naturally outside the city. They're not inside the city walls in the palace of Indra. It's called Amaravati. Amaravati, Amar means the place of no death. Amaravati is the name of the city of Indra in Indraloka. Amar, no mar, no death. Amaravati, of course he dies, but that's wishful thinking. Sometimes people live in Delhi and they call their house Brajagokul or Radha Bhavan or whatever. It's a nice idea, but it's far from reality. It's just some stinky, crappy house with a toilet in Delhi. But it's a nice name. It's nice to remember such beautiful things. But so he calls it Amaravati. I'm not sure how to say exactly. Amaravati, whatever. Amaravati, the capital of Indra. So they left the palace precincts and got out in the country and driving down the road. And they came near Nandakana Gardens, and Satyabhama said, stop! Dwarkadi, stop the chariot, or Garuda, stop. What's wrong? See that? That's Nandakanan Gardens. Remember yesterday, or we walked through there with Indra and he showed us the Parijat trees? Yes. Well, I want one. What? What are you talking about? Yes, I want you to steal one, the biggest, most beautiful tree with the most abundant flowers, laden heavily with flowers, this best favorite Parijat tree. I want that one. And I want you to bring it to Dwarka to put it into my palace courtyard. Now. What are you talking about? That's stealing. We can't. We've been invited as honored guests amongst all the demigods. We can't. That's a sour note to leave a party on, to rip off his favorite tree. You can't do this. This is not state protocol. This is ridiculous. No. Remember? Several months ago, you promised me. Remember? When I was angry. Oh, no. Hey, Bhagavan. Krishna said, hey, Bhagavan. And he said, all right, dasasmi. And he got off the chariot and he ripped that tree out, all roots and root hairs and everything. And the mali and the guards of that Nandakanan Gardens, the private flower gardens of Indra, they pressed the alarm bell and ding, 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 and they called Indra. Said, Indra, Krishna's ripping off your trees. And which one? Is it your biggest favorite Parijat tree? He said, what? What is this? Attack! Armies attack! Kill him! Get my tree back! That's my tree! I don't care about Krishna. Kill that guy. Get my tree back. And the army went out there and Indra went crazy, you know, just like before he attacked the Vrijavasis. He's a little cracked up sometimes, you know. He gets insulted. You insult his pride. He wanted to kill Krishna, all the Vrijvasis. He was so cracked. Now, just for stealing a tree, he wants to kill Krishna again. He's a little hot-headed type. And that's the whole story there. So now, Brahma, knowing all those things and aware of all these things, he says that these forest garlands, these wild flowers and leaves from the trees, simple green leaves hanging around Krishna's neck, this garland and mala is superior to pushpa malas made of parijat flowers from Swargaloka. This little story gives some significance, and you can understand how unique Vrindavan is, that a green leaf from Vrindavan is more desirable and opulent and appreciable even in Satyaloka by Lord Brahma, who can go anywhere in the universe and get whatever he wants. He's appreciating, this is Aishwarya of Krishna. This parijat is nothing. It's like trample it under your feet. By mentioning the morsel of yogurt rice in Krishna's hand, because Brahma is glorifying that, in his hand he has this rice. Vishnath is commenting why he's saying that and what it means. He says, by Brahma's mentioning the morsel of yogurt rice in Krishna's hand, his stick, his cowherding stick and his buffalo horn, Lord Brahma is indicating the superiority of Krishna's cowherd boyhood form over all other forms of Godhead and all other forms of Krishna. Krishna is a form of a king in Mathura, a form of a king in Dwarka, and a Kurukshetra, he's a king with a golden crown and jacket and buttons and shoes and all these things. But here he's got rice in his hand and he has some forest stick. He found a stick lying somewhere, broke off some of the twigs on the side and had a little natural crutch, you know, little natural Y-shaped stick you could lean on. Like when you're hiking around the country here and there, you find some walking stick and it stays with you for a few weeks and you lose it and pick up another one. You're not too attached to it. It doesn't cost anything. It's a little crude in shape and you rather like it. Sometimes you get attached to it too. But you learn to gradually give up your attachments when you're on the road traveling, and when you're on the road traveling back to Godhead on the Bhakti Marg. Bhakti Marg is also the journey home, back to Godhead. Then slowly, either voluntarily or involuntarily, we learn to give up all our attachments one by one. And finally, on the Bhakti Marg, we come to the platform of Ruchi. We come to one small rest stop when we're walking on the Bhakti Marg, and we give up this attachment and that attachment, this walking stick and that walking stick. We gradually come to a little rest stop on the Bhakti Marg. We come to a little village that's called Ruchigaon, the village of taste. And when we get there, we'll find, now I've come to this stage of my journey back home, I feel that I don't have any interest in Dhanam na Janam na Sundarim. Dhanam na Janam na Sundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmani shkare bhavatad bhakti hoite kuit. I want bhakti, 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 service, 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 seva, seva, seva. I don't want bhog. I don't want enjoyment. I don't want pleasure from this body, from this world, from these people, from these things, from these sights and sounds and tastes and forms and countries and oceans and water. I don't want any pleasure from any element of this world or any element of this body. I don't want to squeeze or enjoy or extract pleasure from the earth element of my body or the earth element of other bodies. I simply want to serve Krishna with every atom of my existence. This is Ruchi on the path of bhakti. Sri Krishna Bhagavan ki jai jai Sri Radhe. So Brahma is marveling at the opulence of Krishna's simple pastoral beauty. Braj is the most amazing dham and the most wealthiest and sweetest dham because of the dust and the peacock feathers. And Krishna is the most, in Vrindavan Sri Krishna is the most amazing form of Godhead. He's so adbhuta rupam, amazing, astonishing form, because he defeats everyone in all forms of Godhead with his simple vaijyanti mala and leaf garland. Now he mentions about Krishna's soft feet, Mridupade. Mridupade Pashupangajaya. And in other words, this is a tika by Vishnu, by Srila Chakravartipad, Vishnu Chakravartipad. Brahma is saying this, and any philosopher, any good philosopher, always asks the question, why? We've given classes like this before. Every ordinary man with half a brain will experience something, see something, hear something, read something. He has some experience, he's driving down the road and he sees a car accident, or he hears about a car accident. He asks questions, who, where, what happened, how did it happen? Oh, he ran the red light and hit this guy in a motorcycle. Oh, whose fault was it? How did it happen? When did it happen? Who, what, when, where, how? This is the general line of questions of most mudas and rascals and fools in the world, and that's the sum and substance of newspaper and television shows and news shows. And that getting the answer to those questions satisfies most of the people. But the philosopher moves through the world not caring at all about all those things. He wants to know why. Why this happened? Why these two trucks crashed in the intersection and both died? I don't care that what time it was or what make truck it was or who was going faster and who ran the red light. Why did it happen? Or why did both trucks, they crashed head-on going 100 kilometers each and one driver lived and the other one didn't? Somehow, miraculously, one guy that both trucks were totally destroyed and burned up in flames. One guy crawled out unscratched. Why? So the philosopher is the commentator on the Bhagavatam. He reads, well, Brahma says this. Brahma said Krishna. Brahma, he took a picture with his handy cam, and then he went back. He went on a little tour to Vrindavan. He went on a vacation to Vrindavan, took his handy cam, took a bunch of snaps. Then later he printed them out, and then he wrote on the back, this is Krishna in Vrindavan. In this picture you see Krishna wearing a peacock feather on his head, and some yogurt, that what you see, the little white thing in his left hand, that's yogurt with mixed with rice. And there's some pickles, tandoori pickles between his fingers. Four pickles between the four fingers. And that's a stick, a cow herding stick. So people look at the photo, they read the description or the photo caption, they say, well, that's very nice. They see they read the verse. And then the tika, the commentator, the rasic Vaishnavas, they say, well, why is Brahma saying this? What's his meditation? What's his realization? What's the backing? Why is he saying like this? Why are these features of Krishna touching his intelligence? Why are these features and attributes of Krishna's beautiful form stimulating his mind and causing him to write about them with such choice poetry? Tadid ambaraya gunjavatamsa paripanchanaj, like this. So then he meditates himself, Vishwanath, and he gets some inspiration from Super Soul based on his experience and revelations and understandings of the mentality and heart of Brahma and his own heart and his bhav. Then he writes, why does Brahma mention mridu pade? Why does this particular aspect, soft feet? Chakravarti says, in mentioning Krishna's soft feet, Lord Brahma is indicating that those wandering in the forest of Vrindavan become filled with ecstasy upon seeing Krishna's footprints. Mridupade. So he's saying that these soft feet, and these are the characteristics, one of the characteristics of the body of God. The transcendental body of God, his complexion, his transcendental skin, if you want to use the term skin, although it's not a material body like ours, skin and nails and bones and all these things. He's totally transcendental, such an ananda vigra. But as a point of reference, he has, it's nara lila, so he has a complexion and he has softness and hardness and shortness and longness, and Nectar Devotion describes the different transcendental bodily features when describing the 64 qualities of Krishna. Rupa Goswami enunciates those, and he says, three parts of Krishna's body are short, and five parts are deep. His voice is deep, his navel is deep, his intelligence is deep. And three parts are broad, his chest is broad, his forehead, etc. When it talks about his feet and hands, it says they're very soft. How soft is Krishna's skin? The analogy is given there or elsewhere that Krishna's skin is softer than a newly unfurled leaf of a tamal tree. Mridupate. So everyone knows, as I'm saying tamal Krishna, that Krishna's, that the tamal trees very much are anukul, favorable for the gopis and others to remember Krishna. They often embrace the tamal tree and praying Vibram or Brahma Vivart. In the bewilderment of love, Radharani's feeling separation, she sees, oh, some peacock may be perched in the upper branches of a tamal tree, and Radharani sees that peacock feathers in the tree, and she thinks that's Krishna's hair. The leaves of the tree are Krishna's head and hair, and that peacock tail is actually the peacock feather on Krishna's hair, and then the trunk, the center trunk of the tree, below the peacock, below the branches where the peacock is perching up on the top side, that is Krishna's curving, because a tamal tree, as you know, doesn't grow straight like a kadamba tree. Everything about Radharani is straight. Radhakund is straight. Krishna Shyamakund is crooked. So bakul trees grow very, very straight, straight like an arrow. And kadamba trees grow very, very straight. You can see in the garden in Mayapur, Prabhupada's little garden next to the lotus building, if it's still there. It's surrounded right there, the lotus building, where the grass is there, and Prabhupada used to sit. There's a row of kadamba trees on the Ganga side. And on the other side, there's coconut trees on the opposite side of the garden. Then one side is a lotus building, the other side is a long building. Yeah, that's right next to the lotus building. Prabhupada used to walk up and down that grass. I saw there myself. So this kadamba tree is very tall and straight, and Radharani is straight. When Krishna has yellow flowers, has a whitish, yellowish color bark, and beautiful, fragrant yellow flowers, which are golden in color like Radharani. And Krishna loves the kadamba tree and loves the climate and smell the flowers because they remind him somewhat, not Radharani's body is so much more, but the heady, herbal, intoxicating fragrance of kadamba flowers, which they have inherently, intoxicates Krishna enough to give him strong memories of the fragrance of Radharani's beautiful body. So when he climbs up the kadamba tree at Tarakadamba in Nandagram, ostensibly to play the flute to call some wandering cows, to count them on his jeweled neck, his japa beads of 108 jeweled beads, so that he count the different 108 major groups of cows that he has. He has to count them all before he brings them into Nanda's Goshala, which is nearby Tarakadamba, at least some of them, to make sure they have all come home. So when you climb up on a tree, you can get a good vantage point of the whole landscape. It's, oh, look, there's a cow sitting there over there, half a kilometer away, drinking some water there at Kishori Kund at Yavat. Yavat Gram is nearby, and there's Kishori Kund. And some cow wandered over there on the way back from Koshi, that we went to Koshi side today, or we went to Kokilavan, wherever they wander. What are you doing there? Oh, Mataji, what are you doing? Oh, go, Mata. Now Krishna is sitting in the branch of the kadamba tree. He calls that cow and she runs over. Tom, tom, tom. And then Krishna taps her on the snout with his hand and says, Mataji, why you wandered so far away? Look, everyone's here. Your calves are calling for you in the goshala. They're waiting for you eagerly. And then the cow says, oh, I'm sorry. I won't do that again. But ostensibly or externally, it appears that Krishna is simply doing his cowherding duty of calling the cows back from the branches of the kadamba tree in Tarakadamba and Nandagram before he climbs up Nandishwar to take a bath and Nandishwar Parvat and take a little evening Mahaprasad, Narayan Prasad. But actually, we know that Krishna's feeling intense separation from Radharani after leaving her at Suryakund a short time before, after the end of Madhyan Leela, and now it's Apurvan Leela is returning. So he's climbed up in the Kadamba tree. He says, "Oh, I'm feeling so much separation from Radharani. Oh, how can I have to submerge myself and become absorbed in her thought and her memory. And I need some udipan or something to stimulate my memories of Radharani. Oh, Radharani, oh, Radharani. Ah, there's a, oh, look at this Kadamba tree. Because tera means to call. T-E-R means to call, to summon, to bring. So, all right. Oh, boys, listen. I think I'm short a few cows. You just sit here under the tree. Wait, I'm going to climb up in this tree and call some of my cows. Okay, Krishna, go ahead, Lala. Go, climb in the tree." So Krishna says, "Oh, I fooled them. I faked them out." So Krishna is climbing the tamal tree, climbing the branches to get up to the top where the beautiful fragrant flowers are blossoming. He's climbing. Oh, Radhe, 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 Radhe. He climbs up the tree and these are freshly blossoming flowers because Yoga Maya has arranged for those flowers to blossom 1 second before, knowing Krishna's desire to immerse himself in the sweet, intoxicating aroma of Radharani's fragrance. Gandharvika Radharani ki. Gandharvika Giridhari ki. Gandharvika is the name for Radharani, that she's so fragrant that when she walks on the earth, from her feet comes fragrance which lends fragrance to the earth. Krishna says in Gita, in English it's translated, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, when they're talking about his vibhutis and opulences, he says, I am the original fragrance of the earth. Maybe you remember that phrase. And Ganda, the word is Ganda, Gandasmi. Bhumir Gandasmi. Bhumir Gandasmi. Bhumir means Bhumi, earth. I am the original Bhumir Adi Gandasmi. I am the original fragrance of the earth. But fragrance is a power, it's a potency, it's an experience, it's a Shakti. And as you know, all Shakti comes from Radharani. Sarva Shakti Mayi Radha Rani Ki Jai. Radharani is Gandharvika. When she walks on the earth, her beautiful, tender, lotus petal-like feet, they emit a beautiful fragrance which oozes from her feet. Beautiful musk and kasturi and sandalwood and betel flowers and all mixed together. And that every touch of her foot enriches the earth with a beautiful fragrance. So Radharani is actually the original fragrance of the earth emanates from Gandharvika Radha. Krishna's climbing the branch of the Kadamba tree and he's searching for Radha's fragrance, and then Yogamaya arranges for all these freshly blossoming flowers to burst forth and emit not only fragrance, but honey is oozing from the flowers and falling on Krishna's hair as he's sitting on the branches of flowers above his head. The drops of Kadambari is called Kadambari, the madhu is falling on his hair. And that's another fragrance and soothing experience. So he feels as if the touch of Radharani is upon his head as he deeply imbibes the sweet fragrance of Radharani's transcendental fragrance, which is indicated by the fragrance of the Kadamba flowers. It stimulates his own internal memories of Radharani's wonderful transcendental fragrance in various times of intimacy that he shares with Radharani. And that relieves Krishna from the burning fire of separation he feels from Radha when he returns from the forest in the afternoon and Apuran Leela. That's why Krishna climbs the tree at Terakadamba. Sri Krishna Bhagavan Ki. So these soft feet of Krishna are softer than a leaf of a newly unfurled leaf of a tamal tree. We have one, and if you go, there's different leaves. Or over there, Janava's Baitak, there's a tamal tree there, and I think it was a Bokul tree that recently left its body after being beat up by the monkeys for so many years. There used to be two trees. You touch that leaf, it's the new one, it's a little baby leaf. Very, very soft. Very, very soft. We have an expression in English, as soft as a baby's skin. They have this term. I don't know. I guess we were all babies at one time. But Lord Brahma is particularly noting that. I don't think he actually felt Krishna's feet, but he's glorifying Krishna's feet because he knows that this is one of the samudrika. There's one scripture called Samudrika, which describes the physiognomy or the physical characteristics of the human body of a Narottam. A Narottam. A Nara means man, and Uttam means a topmost man. So the characteristics of a very high class and highly cultured, civilized human being are, you know, high forehead and very soft hands and feet. The skin, and it's not that they just walk around in butter-filled shoes all day. They don't stuff their shoes with yogurt and butter and keep them nice and nice emollient. They call it emollient. Emollient cream, which means, emollient means to soften and tenderize or soften and moisturize. They don't do that like we have our hand lotions and all these things. They don't walk around with butter-filled shoes or yogurt-filled shoes to keep their feet. They walk around and prick them barefoot. Krishna's now see it. Krishna's walking barefoot everywhere, all day long, 9 hours a day, walking with no shoes all over this thorn-filled, sticker-filled land of Vrindavan, which the gopis are so worried about because they know how mridupade, how soft and tender his feet are. And if you see any hardcore prikamawalas that do every day Giriraj Prikama once or twice or thrice a day, these wonderful and great exalted detached and attached to Giridhari and Krishna and such Vajranandi Vaishnavas, they go around twice or thrice a day of Govardhan. Their feet are weathered. They're weathered. The heels are full of chilbane. Chilbane means cracks. And those feet can tell unlimited leelas. Those feet are experienced in all the various aspects of Brajaraj. And we pray for the dust of the feet of such exalted Vaishnavas may touch our dirty, filthy head and hearts. But they're definitely not soft, like the feet of a queen walking around her palace, who soaks her feet in milk every night for 3 hours. But Krishna is doing the same thing. He's walking around Govardhan 10 times a day. No problem. Chasing cows here and there. He's walking sometimes what appears to us to be 40 or 80 kilometers a day. He's walking from Nandagram to Batrol. Batrol is where Krishna went. He went to Akuragad. He went to Batrol, is where he interacted with the yagyic Brahmins and took their food from the yagya. Batrol is 40 kilometers from Nandagram. So Krishna said one day, the boys, he went to Talavan. Talavan's 38 kilometers or something. Boys, boys, you know what it is? It's May, mid-May. You know what happens in mid-May? Yeah, it gets hot. It's really hot. No, silly. Don't you remember? Yeah, I know. I remembered last year. It was so hot that we couldn't stand it. We had to go to Bandiravan and stay under the banyan tree, shade of the banyan tree all day long and just simply drink Jamuna water and relax. It was too hot to play even. No, no, no. In mid-May is when the tal fruits become ripe. Remember those juicy, tasty, sweet, fragrant, aromatic, perfume-like fragrance of those juicy, lychee-like tal fruits. Oh, yeah. Those are really good. Krishna, let's go. You must be, Krishna Balaram, you must be hungry, right? You must be really thirsty. You want to savor some beautiful. So Krishna says, yes, boys, today let's go to Talavan. All right. And they start blowing their panpipes and their flutes and they're just having a grand time dancing down the road and singing and skipping and jumping and leapfrogging and over each other. And the cows' tails are in the air and they're jumping and frolicking. And there they go down the footpaths of Vrindavan. And then they go to Talavan. And then, of course, some small impediment to their leela, but they manage to remove that impediment and kick ass, so to speak. We have this phrase in America, if you get a couple of guys together and beat up a couple other guys, you say we went out there and kicked ass. So Danakasura was an ass, a donkey, a demon, the donkey demon, the ass demon. So they kicked him. Actually, they swung them, they whirled them, they grabbed them by the hind legs and whoop, 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 whoo! And they threw Balaram, is throwing him up in the tree like he's slinging a fruit sling with a rock and a sling, and you sling it around, let loose, and a rock goes up and knocks off the bale fruit from the top of the tree. So Krishna would walk so far, but at the end of the day, still soft, tender, soft feet, mridupate, mridupate. But Brahma didn't really, why is he saying mridupade? Because Brahma is actually indicating, he didn't touch or massage these feet, but he's indicating that the forest of Vrindavan became filled with ecstasy upon seeing Krishna's footprints, and the forest was feeling. The forest means the land, that's what I said. Vrindavanam Swapadaramanam, as the Bhagavatam is telling in the Vainagita. Vrindavanam, the forest, the land, this feeling, the softness of his feet. And of course the birds and forest creatures and trees are all seeing these footprints. And Sanatan Goswami says in his Toshini commentary on the Bhagavatam that no one would step in Krishna's footprints. It was unheard of. They were forever preserved, embedded in the bosom of Vrindavan, in the earth of Vrindavan. The tigers were chasing here and there and running. They said, oh, wait, hold it a second, stop. What happened? What happened? Look, stupid, these are Krishna's footprints. Oh, and then the tigers would bow down. Dandabhajai, these are Krishna's footprints. Sanatan says that none of the animals, there's thousands and thousands of cows, and that somehow they were so expert, they had a computer navigation system. Every cow has a computer navigation system, like they land the airplanes in the fog. When there's fog in the airports, and it's all fog, you can't see anything. You can't land by seeing where you're going. You have to use a computer landing system, communication system. Somehow they know, because Krishna's in their heart, giving them all knowledge. Teshama sadata yuktanam, bhajatam priti purvakam, dadami buddhi yogam tam, yena mamu piyantate. Krishna gives knowledge to everyone. He gives knowledge to the bird. The bird sits in his nest, and he says, oh, hey, I'm hungry. Yeah, me too. Let's go out and find some worms. Okay, let's go. Then the birds fly right, left, up, down, here and there, and they go 2 or 3 kilometers out in the field, and they find all these worms in the freshly plowed fields. And they have a lot of, you know, munch them up. And they have some big, you know, feast over there. Then one bird says, I want to go home and sleep. The other one says, yeah, me too. I'm really stuffed. And then the other one bird says, I forgot how to get back to the nest. Where is it? Well, it's in the tree. It's in the tree. Look, stupid. Look over there, back there. There's like 50 million trees back there. Which tree? I know where it is. Come on. So they remember to come back to their nest, isn't it? So Krishna gives remembrance and knowledge, even to a bird. So the cows have knowledge. Oh, the cows are, 9 lakhs of cows are walking. And they say, oh, there's Krishna's footprint. And they're all so nimble-footed, so nimble and so adroit, that not one cow steps in one footprint. And that's a remarkable achievement, since each cow has 4 feet to keep track of. They have to keep track of the front right and left and back right and left. And neither front or back feet, they don't touch one speck of Krishna's footprints. This is what Sanatana Goswami says in his Tika. This is adar. This is regard, respect, and love for Krishna's footprints. Mridupade. So is Krishna, and has he soft hands and feet and these characteristics of the greatest of all personalities also great devotees have? When the devotees would massage Prabhupada's feet, they say, wow, they're like butter. Usually the older you get, the harder you get. Your mind gets hard and your heart gets hard and you get grouchy and, hey, what's this, do this, do that. You see, if you're ever with some old person, they're really a little short. Prabhupada's feet were so soft and he was walking all around the planet. He was walking in all the parks and beaches and everywhere in every city, walking everywhere. And he walked all around Vrindavan for 6 or 8 years with his feet. Every servant says feet were so soft. This is one of the signs of a great personality, very soft hands and feet. Mridu pade. But not only does it mean mridu means soft, but it's also a type of experience. Mridu also means joy, ecstasy. So that's why Vishnu is saying, why is Brahma saying that Krishna's feet he's glorifying in verse 1 of chapter 14 of 10th canto. He's saying, Mridupate, Mridupade, soft feet, gentle feet, tender feet. He didn't touch them. He doesn't really know directly. And no one told him that. But he's understanding the effect. The effect is also Mridu. They create a very tender feeling of ecstasy when anybody sees them. This is what Vishwanath is revealing to us in his revelation, in his tika. Chakravarti Pad is saying, in mentioning, in Brahma's telling us that Krishna's feet are, he says, Lakshma Shriye Mridu Pade Pashupanga Jaya in verse 1, by Brahma's indicating or glorifying in Sanskrit the soft feet of Krishna, he's indicating that anyone who is wandering in the forest of Vrindavan, they will become filled with ecstasy upon seeing Krishna's footprints. We have seen Krishna's footprints. Many devotees have seen Krishna's footprints in Vrindavan. You can see them right here in Ratnavedi, on the entrance to Ratnavedi, which is near Kusum Sarovar in the Govardhan Parikamar, Krishna's footprints. You can go to Kamyavan and climb the mountain of Charan Bihari and you can see Krishna's footprints. You can go to Nandagram, that's out in Kamyavan. You can go to Nandagram near Brindakund and go a little further on the left-hand side, there's Krishna's footprints. And you can go to Onchagaon, to Sakhi Parvat. Onchagaon is Lalita Sakhi's place behind Barsana, and you can climb up and on top of Sakhi Parvat, you can see Krishna's footprints and also the gopis' footprints. And you can see Radharani's little tiny footprint in Barsana on a rock. And when you climb up to the top on the right hand side near the little temple of Brahma, there's a hole in the wall that says Sri, and written in Hindi, little tiny rock like a Shila, Barsana Shila, little two little footprints. A little small, but they say Radharani's footprints, and it's written in Hindi, Radharani's Charan Pada. Well, Vishwanath is indicating a very broad statement here. He says, Brahma is seeing Sakshat Darshan of Krishna's Leela. When he sold the calves, Krishna was Pogunda Leela. He's around four, about 5 years old, Pogunda Leela. And he's describing what he's seeing, Krishna's appearance and what he's wearing and what he's holding and what he's doing and eating and all these things. Then he's commenting, and Vishwanath says that this comment has philosophical portentions or philosophical implications. Mridu Pade, Vishnu says, Brahma is saying, those wandering in the forest of Vrindavan. And we can ask, the reader can ask himself a question. Am I wandering the forest of Vrindavan? Am I living in Vrindavan, or at least externally? And am I moving here and there around Govardhan, around Vrindavan, Parikrama Marg, or visiting Nandagram? On one level, we can say, yes, my body, at least, is wandering and walking in Vrindavan and walking around Radhakund. And do I wander the forest? Do I see Krishna's footprints? Yes, I have seen them many times here and there. And after I see Krishna's footprints, do I become filled with ecstasy? Because this is what Brahma is understanding, because he's seeing that, he's observed when he stole the calves and boys for 1 year of this time, it was actually one moment of his time. But it was 1 year on earth. So during that year, he saw everything. He was watching. What's Krishna going to do now for this one moment, which was 1 year? Krishna became all these coward boys, all his friends and all the calves, and continued walking. And as Brahma was watching that, he was seeing that whenever the resonance of Vrindavan, whenever the cows would see Krishna's footprints, or any coward men when they're wandering, oh, look! Oh, Nanda! Oh, Upananda! Upananda! Nanda! Abhinanda! Look! Here's Nandalal's footprints! Ah! Oh, Nandalal's! Oh, my Nandalal! Oh, where is he now? Oh, he must have walked here a few hours ago. And we're walking by here doing some work over in our fields or whatever. And they would feel so ecstatic, and Brahma saw all of that. And he has four heads, he can see everything. He can see up, down, right, left, right, left, back and front, in four directions. So he's observing everything. There's one head he's watching Krishna and the coward boys, and another head he's watching the animals and birds of Vrindavan. Another head he's watching the parishas, or the gopas. Another head he's watching the gopis. He's omnidirectional heads, like an omnidirectional microphone. So he's seeing in four directions with his four heads, and that's what he means by Mridu Pade, that the Brijvasis, any Brijvasi that's wandering, and Vishnath is not saying Brijvasis or Parishas, he says those wandering in the forest of Vrindavan, they become filled with ecstasy upon seeing the footprints of Krishna, as Akura did. When Akura left Mathura to come collect Krishna and Balaram to take him to Kamsa's wrestling arena for that Dhanur Yajna where Kamsa met his fate, Akura was traveling on his chariot from Mathura to Vrindavan. He glanced out of the side and he saw Krishna's footprints, and what did he do? He said, "Oh, look, Krishna's footprints, Haribo." He fell off his chariot, rolled over, he rolled his chariot. He crashed the thing right into a neem tree. He bounced off the side, broke his seatbelt, and he jumped out of the chariot. He was rolling, "Oh, how fortunate, how fortunate, how fortunate I am, how fortunate, Krishna's footprints, Krishna's footprints." He was in ecstasy. You can read that chapter. And Prabhupada, in that chapter he says, in the Krishna book, Prabhupada's Krishna book, he's saying, Akura is showing the way to come to Vrindavan. Akura is showing how to enter Vrindavan. Give up your false prestige. I am the minister of the emperor of the entire land of Uttar Pradesh or whatever it was. Akura's minister, and I'm asked for all the confidential missions. Akura was he's the home minister of Kamsa. So he's proud. Naturally so. But Prabhupada said that he showed the way. Give up your false pride, pride in position, pride in power, beauty, knowledge, acquisition. You're a big man, a big woman. Forget it all. You're nothing. You're just like dasana, dasana, das. Come to Vrindavan and strip yourself clean of all these upadis. Sarvupadi vanirmuktam tatpratvena nirmalam. Rishikesh rishikenam sevanam bhaktyushite. Come to Vrindavan to serve Rishikesh, to serve Krishna, not to enjoy and show off your fancy car and fat, big flat and big bank account and how big man, I'm a big man, look at me, I give big donations, my name is so-and-so and so-and-so, give me recognition, name and fame. Don't come to Vrindavan to get name and fame and acclaim by throwing your money around here and there and trying to make a big splash. Come to Vrindavan to do humble service without any recognition. Don't seek profit, adoration, distinction, but seek service for service's sake, simply for the pleasure of the Vaishnavas and Krishna. So Akura, he threw away everything and just rolling in the dust like a common beggar or like some animal, like an elephant after bathing in the river, rolling in the dust, or some horse. You see donkeys or horses, they roll in the dust to scratch themselves or something, I don't know what. And they shake their fur when they get up and look really crazy. So he's jumping in the dust. Krishna, Krishna, how fortunate. I've seen your footprints. He's so ecstatic just to see the footprints and anticipating that maybe soon I'll see Krishna Sakshat Darshan when I get to Nandagram. Maybe, if I'm fortunate. More fortunate. So we're wandering in Vrindavan and we're seeing Krishna's Mridu Pade. And are we becoming filled with ecstasy? No. That is our sorry plight. But we can pray to this Lord Brahma and to this verse and to Vishwanath that someday we will see Krishna's footprints and swoon in ecstatic bliss, absorbing ourselves in Krishna's Nam, Rupa, Guna, and Leela. And concluding the verse by stating that Krishna is the son of a cowherder, Pashupa Anga Jaya, Brahma shows the superior fortune of Nanda over Vasudeva. He's Devaki Nandan, Vasudeva Nandan, or Vasudeva Sutta. He also is the son of them, but they can't compare to Nanda Maharaj. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. So by Krishna's mercy and the blessings of Prabhupada and Giridhari, we will try to speak something tomorrow on the second prayer of Brahma Stuti, chapter 14.